I understand, I haven't seen it, but a real revolution. The main state of things I think we have to be concerned with, and I don't personally remember it, the difference in my own experience.
Yes, this is all, of course, a total perversion of everything in Scripture. The new line of the far left and of the National Council is that the Bible is not concerned with metaphysics or with truth. It is simply concerned with action. And so Jesus didn't believe in an unchanging truth. He was for a new truth for each age. He was for perpetual revolution. In fact, Harvey Cox, one of the leaders of this school, who teaches at Harvard Divinity School, mind you, has one sentence in his book, The Secular City, in which he said, Jesus is a mobile man. In other words, he was a man who was perpetually in motion, believed in perpetual change. And of course, the ideal for Harvey Cox and for the National Council increasingly is the urban man who lives in an apartment and is completely rootless. This is the man of the future. And secularization is the fulfillment, they insist, of the gospel. Now, of course, this is nothing more nor less than a total perversion. And in terms of this, the gospel becomes world revolution. The idea in all of this, of course, is to take over the churches and to destroy them from within. And what they have done is to work very slowly in order to brainwash the people, to get them to accept the new meanings they give to words. For example, all of us think of the word humanism and humanitarianism as good words, don't we? And if you speak of a man as a great humanitarian, you're saying something fine about him. But if you will check Webster's dictionary for the definition of humanitarianism, you will see that the basic meaning of the word is one who denies the deity of Christ and Christianity and believes in the divinity of man. But what they have done is to take that word and try to make it cognate with everything that's good and noble and ideal, and little by little introduce that as a secondary meaning while retaining the first meaning. So now you have two meanings in the dictionary. And this is how steadily they destroy words, and how they destroy the very text of the Bible. They take and reinterpret, just as the Constitution has been reinterpreted by eisegesis until it means its direct opposite. We don't have constitutional government any longer. We've had the weird thing in California in the past week of having a part of the Constitution declared unconstitutional. Now, I have no doubt that very soon we will be told that vast portions of our Constitution are unconstitutional, the U.S. Constitution, in terms of the U.N. Charter or some other higher law, the Supreme Court. In other words, these reinterpretations of Christ are total perversion, designed steadily to brainwash people. And the thing we must do is to stay away from these things as far as possible and warn people about them, and to break with every church that is a part of this National Council, World Council conspiracy against Jesus Christ. Yes?
Russ, that was a very interesting meeting today. The social workers and administrators of social welfare funds down down in Long Beach, and especially in the reorganization, was also the administrator of the Warren Poverty Fund in Santa Barbara. And he told about going to a meeting of a seminar sponsored by UCLA at Lake Arrowhead, and all of the people who were interested in the Warren Poverty Fund were there, you know, the new social work type. And he said they were all there so that, you know, the girls were there dancing. Needs and so forth, but the two lecturers were Saul Alinsky and somebody by the name of Booth from Detroit, who he said was a real rabble-rouser. And he said this was an eye-opening experience because all they talked about is the majority of them were Negroes and Mexicans, and among them, the great percentage of the Negroes were either black ones or the black nationalists, and they talked about revolution all weekend. And he said that Alinsky and Booth were there to train them on how to go into cities and take over, destroy the established order of cities and everything. So they are quite openly, you know, discussing taking over our cities and everything. But he tied the National Council of Churches and we saw this. And he said the best hearing church in California is going to be $200,000. The further his nonprofit foundation.
Yes. He has already stated, Saul Alinsky has already stated that practically all his support for his program of revolution, breaking the power structure, as he calls it, virtually all his funds come from the churches. This is very true, because the gospel according to the churches is no longer Jesus Christ, it is revolution. Yes.
Would all evangelists be considered the same as Billy Graham,
Irish? No, you can't make a flat judgment of all of them. A number of them have that compromising stand, but others definitely do not. The one who is the most militant against any compromise and the most consistent in his hostility to compromise, to any social gospel, is John R. Rice. John R. Rice, R-I-C-E. He puts out a little weekly, The Sword of the Lord, and he has been quite militant in his hostility to these things. Yes. Yes, that's true. Our new slugs are not accepted across the border. Speaking of revolution, if you have not yet seen the new American Opinion for May, the lead article on Watts, the fact that another explosion is due on Watts this summer, I heartily recommend that you read it. Yes, they state the areas, Southgate, Linwood, Downey, that are expected to go up in flames this time because their program is to move out progressively into white areas. Yes. No, because our faith has to be relevant to history. And therefore we must be concerned with these things. We must do battle against the powers of darkness. But we cannot ever believe that the power is with darkness. so that we must contend for the faith, we must apply the faith to every area, we must move out into politics, economics, every area, education, but we must never, never feel that the initiative belongs to the enemy or that they are going to prevail.
Well, what I'm trying to bring out, it seems to me that the approach is sort of a humanistic approach down through history in times, you know, Christians have suffered and there's been many different kinds of crises. But today we are concerned with that and have a real interest in it. Well, I would choose to not have it, and I know this is wrong, but I don't know how to discuss it properly.
Yes. I know what you're talking about. Some Christians who feel that the way to show that they have faith is to separate themselves so totally from the world that they do nothing about the evil that goes on around them. Now, there are a lot of these ultra-fundamentalistic groups on college campuses. Their attitude is that they're not going to concern themselves about anything, applying their faith or fighting what they get. They're simply going to have prayer meetings and try to build themselves up spiritually. And the result is that they surrender more than any other Christian group. Because the minute you say, I'm not going to fight, you surrendered. Then you end up making peace with them. This past week, I was with a lot of campus groups in the Midwest speaking on different college campuses to groups great and little. And I was scheduled to speak, among other things, at the university there, an university group. And I told the man with whom I was going I was not happy about such a meeting because I had never found much response with such groups, only once where I could say the response was passably good, because such people were not interested in having the faith made relevant. They just wanted to know how they could escape more, in other words, some gimmicks about prayer life and that sort of thing, but no real application of the faith. And it was really something. It was the one negative response I had on the trip, because I had this group of college kids and their faculty sponsor and the area coordinator. The area coordinator was working for a doctorate in guidance and counseling, mental health. The faculty sponsor was as leftist and as strong believer in the mental health movement as you could find. And when I spoke out against these things and pointed out the Christian attitude had to be one of hostility to these things, because they were another gospel, socialism, the mental health movement, and all these things, the reaction was one of hysteria. And this faculty sponsor, who was a young woman, was practically screeching most of the time during the question period, not letting any of the students have a chance. And the attitude of the students was one of shock, just plain shock. Well, why can't I believe in the biblical morality and in the morality of more, Principia Ethica? Because I said one is totally atheistic and relativistic, and the other says there is an absolute moral law by God. Well, why can't you bring the two together? And that was it over and over again. Why can't I be a good Christian as long as I read so many verses a day and have a prayer life, and then be a socialist and believe in everything the world teaches, in its moral code and everything else, as long as my devotional life is maintained? And I finally got one boy to say that the scripture was the absolute law of God and totally binding, and there could be nothing else that could have any authority with him unless it were in conformity with it. But he waited until no one else was around him before he hastily said yes and dashed off. Now, this is what happens. These people are the ones who talk about their faith being so pure. But by refusing to apply their faith, they surrender it. They are the worst element. I was very right before I went into that meeting, and I said I wasn't happy about such groups, because I know what they are. They are the holier-than-thou people, but they are the worst ones when it comes to a surrender. You can speak to liberals, and you challenge them. They know that what you say is contradictory to what they hold. But these people, it's not either or, but both and. And you can't deal with such fuzzy-minded thinking. You can only send it to hell where it belongs. Yes.
Sometimes when I'm reading the paper and I come across an article on some terrible crime investigation, and there was one in the paper last week about a mother of seven children who had torched a 16 year old. She was involved two of her teenage children and two baby children. And there's such a little bit of information that certainly this person is human possessed of some sort. And I was just wondering, how does one identify a witch?
That's quite a
and
question.
They were burned at the stake.
Yes. Yes. This is a big question, and it involves quite a great deal. What are witches, and what is involved in it? There were witches burned at the stake or executed in various ways during the latter part of the Middle Ages. And subsequently, at the beginning of the modern era, who were they? Now, they definitely were not the Halloween type of character. And this is a lot of nonsense that has been quite extensively promoted, and the idea has been circulated that this was a lot of superstition and the whole thing represented a great deal of bigotry. The reality is very different. There are a number of excellent books on the subject. I would say the best is by Dr. Murray of the University of London, who has written several books, the two most important, The Witchcraft Cult, in the Middle Ages or in medieval England, I'm not sure of the title, and the other, The God of the Witches, and a third, also very important, The Divine King in England. Now, the witchcraft movement was a highly organized religious and political movement. It was a recrudescence of the old paganism of Europe, the fertility cult, the highly sexual worship, and highly political. It was the subversive movement of the day. And it involved many of the activities that are commonplace together and today in many of these subversive movements, such as Berkeley, where ritual acts of perversion and other things are necessary for membership. I heard yesterday of one such movement in the high schools of Los Angeles County, a secret society for which certain public acts, sexual acts, are necessary before anyone can join. Now, this was one aspect of the witchcraft movement. They were highly organized into covens with male and female leaders. They were definitely subversive, yes. Yes, wizards. They were called wizards.
And also were confused.
Or warlocks. More often warlocks.
How do you consider a witch, say, from a fortune teller or one of the divine rod, all this? I mean, are they all the same family? Or?
Related. related, but somewhat different. The witchcraft movement was a definitely subversive movement that was aiming at the control and overthrow of the states of Europe. It was exceedingly powerful, and at times came within a hairbreadth of open control and had secret control of many of the states. Now, Dr. Murray believes, and there is a fantastic amount written on this in the way of debate back and forth, that Joan of Arc was one of the leaders of this movement, and that is why she had such a popular following. She refused to wear women's clothing. She never spoke of God in anything but a veiled term, which was definitely non-Christian. And her closest associate, Giles de Ray, was subsequently caught and involved in human sacrifice. So, although some would say the case against Joan of Arc is not proven, certainly those associated with her, the case against them is definitely proven. But the movement was exceedingly powerful, and there is reason to believe that at times it gained control within the church quite extensively. And we have one picture of an Archbishop of England wearing the Liberty Cap, the Phrygian Liberty Cap, which is a symbol of this ancient movement. And you find the same tendencies and the same movement clearly behind the French Revolution. Well, I could go on at great length about the history of this movement. Now, these other things you mentioned are occultism, which is related to it, but not necessarily always a part of the revolutionary activity, but closely linked with this, in that it represents a common religious view. Yes. Well, that's a good question. I don't know, but Shaw definitely did portray her as quite a heroine. Now, of course, she was made a saint in the early 20s because of her tremendous popularity among the French for nationalistic reasons. But we must remember that there still is a great deal of suspicion attaching to her. I personally find the evidence quite convincing. I have a copy of the trial record. And she did maintain a good front to the last, but there were certain areas where she ducked the questioning. And it was not the English so much who were responsible for her execution as the French. The French church. The French churchmen felt that she was a total threat to the life of the church. Yes.
Do you consider Madame Blavatsky and Anne Gaspard as witches or just occultists or both?
Occultists, primarily. And definitely subversive, very definitely Fabians, very definitely looking forward to a world socialist order ruled by occultist leaders. But the witchcraft movement was definitely a highly organized thing. We have today, of course, a concerted movement to portray the death of them as a kind of genocide, and we are told that millions were executed, which is total nonsense. Total nonsense. And at the same time, as I pointed out previously, we are told that it was a myth about the Christians being thrown to the lion or being persecuted by the Roman Empire, and there has never been any mass murder to compare to that. There were 10 fearful persecutions as well as minor ones. Yes? Yes, a good question. Now, it is possible that in the Salem trials they became considerably alarmed and did go overboard, but very definitely this thing was involved in the Salem instance. And there were several people of very suspicious character who were very closely connected with some of these things. Now, there was maypole dancing connected with some of their rites. This seems harmless to us because all we can think about is kindergarten children. But the maypole originally was the male phallic symbol, an emblem of it. And the whole of the maypole dance was a highly sexual fertility rite, a religious rite. And these people gathered there to celebrate this at Salem and were involved in a number of highly suspicious activities. Now, it does appear that in fear of what had suddenly turned up in their midst, they did go overboard. But definitely there appears to have been something there. And Dr. Murray does believe that the witchcraft movement was present. Now, Dr. Murray is not a Christian. Dr. Murray is not interested in making a case against the movement. Dr. Murray is simply reporting in these books one aspect of history that she finds interesting. But you see, we have gone through history and debunked it to make the good people fools or guilty people. Yes.
Last year I was following and there was this woman who said she was President Kennedy. And she said that he was an extension of, this is really my words, but in the of Abraham Lincoln, because he was here to send forth the work that Abraham Lincoln started in civil rights. And she said that the spirit tells her these things and so on. Well, she, as she went on, she spoke of God. We cannot destroy the works of God. And I was talking about this morning to my husband, and I was trying to bring out the point that many times these people, they speak of God, but isn't the dividing point Jesus Christ?
Yes. God is simply a word that these people use, and it doesn't mean a thing. And when you try to find out what their definition of God is, you find that he is, in effect, non-existent. And it is fitting that these people who love death should go to the dead for guidance.
Well, there's a place in the scripture, though, isn't there one where he had some sort of divination like this, and when he claimed the power of Jesus Christ, it brought destruction to the evil spirit. I just can't recall what that is.
Well, of course, you have the incident of the woman who was definitely so possessed, and Paul healed her, and there was quite a bit of to-do and commotion because of that, yes. But I think it is significant that some of your modern psychiatrists like Jung, who together with Freud is one of the two great influences in the world of psychiatry, while he did not believe in God, believed in demons and in the reality of demon possession. And he wrote some very interesting things about that.
It's also interesting along that line that these people whom I consider Kabbalists and their witches now down in Haiti, the four leading witches there, or voodoo priests, three of them are Kabbalists.
There's a great deal of witchcraft in Haiti and a great deal of cannibalism too. Which reminds me, I referred a while back when one of you asked a question about this experiment at UCLA and at Chicago in passing on the memory of earthworms to other worms by grinding up the worms that had memorized certain little drills and feeding them to the other earthworms. When I was in Chicago 2 weeks ago, there was an editorial in the Chicago Tribune and they suggested that it would be a good thing to put this to the test in a very real way. Why not grind up some of our left-wing professors and feed them to some of these radical students and see if their knowledge would be passed on that way? Yes. Well, it is prophetic.
It's prophetic.
Yes.
The reason I ask is because the Bible line, yeah, has no stern behind it.
A prophecy, yes. Well, the word prophecy in the Bible has a double meaning. In one sense, it is a prediction concerning the future. And this is the sense in which we usually speak of a prophecy, something that God has predicted about the future. But prophecy has as its more basic meaning to speak for God, so that a prophet is one who speaks for God, so that the whole of the Bible is prophecy, in that it is a speaking for God by various inspired men. But certain passages alone are prophecies in the sense of predictions. Any other questions? Yes?
I figured with Black Sunday, I thought of about the ministers and what they talk about and who's going to heaven, but I heard another one, and this was an audience with Dave Rose and Jews, his wife, and all of them. And this one stated flatly that it's white people that are only going to heaven, they're considered the Israelites in the Old Testament. And then the question was asked, well, where are these other people going? And he says, I don't know and I don't care. I mean, this is it. This is the prophecy of the Bible.
Yes.
And how can you just...
Well, of course, such movements are anti-Christian, basically. That is, of course, British Israelism or Anglo-Israelism. And it is an anti-Christian movement, basically. Its basic orientation is not religious, but political. And it looks for the triumph of the Anglo-Saxon peoples the world over, and they alone are going to be saved, and the others are going to be their slaves in this new world order. And the prophecies concerning Christ are going to be fulfilled in the British royal family. This is total nonsense. And what they have to say is total nonsense. We find the same kind of racist thinking present, of course, in Mormonism, because according to Mormonism, the Negro peoples and the Indian peoples are not going to go to heaven unless they go through a special purgation whereby they cease to be colored and become white men. And this is, of course, one of the problems that stands in the way of any Mormon candidate for presidency. And this has been discussed in connection with Romney, who is the front-running candidate, perhaps, right now. But you find this in a number of these movements which are not to be classified with Christianity. Yes.
The word Israel, too, isn't it interchangeable? I mean, sometimes it means the first of nation, and then it means the first of believers.
Yes. Israel in the Bible refers to the Hebrew peoples as a nation, but it is also used in a double sense. There is the outward Israel and the true Israel of God. And in the New Testament, this especially becomes distinct, this difference, so that the outward Israel is cast off, and the true Israel of God, those who are true believers by faith, are those who are the saved, the elect of God. Now, Israel literally means prince, a prince with God. In other words, someone who has standing with God by his grace. And the true Israelite, therefore, is the one who is a true believer. Yes?
Is this Anglo-Saxon Israelite movement spokesman your heritage program we hear in America?
Yes. There are several speakers on the radio who stand for that. The American Destiny program, then Schiffner in Tacoma, I believe, the Ambassador College group, what is the man's name? Armstrong.
Herbert
Armstrong. Then there is a particularly extreme instance of this in John Wesley Swift. Some of these men are well-meaning men, some of them are dangerous men. Yes?
Aren't they playing right into the hands of the civil rights movement when they protested alienation from
yes.
The races?
Very, very definitely. They are exactly made to order for the civil rights movement because they hold this up as a caricature of a conservative and a Christian. And of course, they have no connection with conservatism because their basic political perspective is totalitarian. They have no connection with Christianity because they deny, in most instances, the fundamental aspects of the faith. There are, however, some well-meaning persons, and I would say that one or two in this area who do some broadcasting are misguided and well-meaning. But by and large, it's a movement to beware of.
Here again, the Hitler philosophy paralleled this too, don't you agree?
Yes, but Hitler never went as far as the British Israelites. By no means. That's the ironic thing. And the British Israelite movement has been very, very powerful and very high in the British government. And it's gone much, much further there than it ever did under the National Socialists. Yes? Yes, it is basically the same belief, except the Zionists say that all these things are true about those who have who are members of Judaism and of the Jewish race, whatever that is. And the the British Israelites say it is true for those who are Anglo-Saxon. Now, you have two groups in the British Israel movement, or Anglo-Israel movement, those who say the Jews are included and those who say they are not included. And one group is very, very passionately anti-Jewish, and the other is very passionately pro-Jewish. But they're basically the same movements. It is racism.
Have you read the latest on Bell Report? He gets into this a little bit specifically about the man Kohlberg, Alfred Kohlberg, who was one of the big men in the Institute of Civic Relations, but who broke with the others in there because they went pro-communist and he was holding with the Anglo-Saxon domination theory. And he became so disjointed with these people that he came out completely and fought them and then financed the John Birch Society. And another interesting tie is that John Birch himself was a student of Frank North, who was the leading light of the British Israel movement.
I haven't seen the last report, but that part about Birch having studied under someone is true, but he never gave any evidence himself of having ever accepted it or believed it. And, of course, Robert Welch did denounce British Israelism when it tried to take over in vast areas of Texas within the society. So he has very definitely denounced the whole movement. And Birch himself cannot be tied personally to it. If we were held responsible for everyone we studied under, we'd be in a sorry situation. Yes.
What is that? You know, I've heard Richard Cotton
talk about it. Zionism is a form of national socialism, whereby the Jewish people believe that they have a destiny to establish a socialist state in Palestine, which is to become, in a sense, a world center and a world leader. And that it has a messianic function, that the real world savior is Judaism and those who are united by race with Judaism. It is primarily political, and whatever religion there is in it is essentially a political faith. Yes.
However, the leader of the group, and I'm thinking of one in particular, John Howard Lawson, in his indoctrination classes, always points out that if you follow their thinking so far, you go to the state of chaos and destruction of what it is. But then you go to communism, whereby the state takes over. It's so interesting that they use the nihilists.
Yes, and to see how the nihilists dressed, you have only to look at your radical students on the college campuses today. It was the same neglect of cleanliness, the same extremist dress. In fact, interestingly enough, they also wore narrow rectangular glasses. And I'm told that in some areas this is also being used by these far-off people. Has anyone seen these? I believe tinted blue also they were.
If anybody here is not aware of what's going on, go through the Friday or Saturday evening, and you can see every aspect of the complete conspiracy. The young people coming out of the university, creep out at night, these certain ones, in their costumes, with their little glasses, their Bolshevik outfits, the French Revolutionary outfits, the little hats with the
Phrygian cap.
And I saw several of them Saturday night on the strip. And they're just all these boots you see, and so forth on these children. This is the coffin of the Bolshevik Dr. Zhivago, by the way.
Are there? Well, whatever name they call them, the certain people have been using them, and these were a part of the costume of the nihilists in Russia. Yes.
I heard something the other day on a radio program, two-way radio. They were discussing the God is dead principle, and they had a survey of people approximately 2 years ago, or the interval between was about 2 years, and that they had found that there were more Jews that were convinced that God was dead than the previous survey, whatever that means, I don't know, but I don't think there's any point to this.
Well, I question that. I would say that certainly a very large number of Jews, the overwhelming majority of them, have no part of any religion and do believe God is dead. But look at the churches today. I would say about 98% of all Christians are in churches that are definitely of the God is dead school. Because anyone who is in a national council churches is affirming the God is dead movement, whether he likes it or not. And he has no business being in such a church, if he is a Christian. And the new national council triennial General Assembly study book for the world by Colin Williams, in effect, says that God is dead and the necessity is for world revolution, for the new morality, and so on. So that we can't pin it on one group. We have to say it's there. And the reason for it is the sin of man. Men have gone for it because this is what they want, and they're not honest enough to say this is the way they like it. It's the sin of man that's responsible. And that sin is in everyone. And of course they say, oh well, we don't subscribe to it. This is something somebody in New York says, but they do subscribe to it, or they would not condone it. They would not be a party of it. And in God's sight, they are accessories after the fact. Yes?
My son here, I think most people say, you know, we're all saying the same thing. Do you tell them that,
right. This is a very common opinion in our day, and it is an opinion that was born with the Enlightenment and has considerable respectability in our time. The answer to that is, of course, that we are not. Because the goal of the Buddhist is extinction, nirvana, oblivion. And his conception is, first, that there is no God, and second, that there is nothing but a total meaninglessness to life, and the best hope that you can have is to escape from life. Now, how can you say this person has anything in common with you who believe in truth, who believe that life has a meaning, and that you are not to forsake this world in terms of a quest for oblivion? Now, this is just Buddhism contrasted with our faith. And the difference is fantastic. If they say we are all going to the same end and have the same purpose, they are denying the total meaning of language, the total meaning of ideas. They are reducing all things to nothingness, and they are seeing that all things are equally meaningless, so that their position is nonsense. Then you can tell them, if we're all headed for the same thing, why aren't you a cannibal? Because the cannibal's way is equally valid with yours. You've equated all ways as equally one way to God. Why don't you take the cannibal's way? And his answer will be, well, of course, I am in my tradition. And you can say, then you're saying the cannibal's tradition is equally valid with yours. In other words, you are equating all things so that you say there is no truth. If there is no truth, what need is there to change anything? Because everything is perfect as it is then. Everything is equally valid. The position is logical nonsense, and such people are fools. No, the Jew does not have the same God as the Christian. The Hebrews did. But Judaism left biblical faith. It makes no pretense now of being biblical. It has, since the 18th century, declared that its primary faith is in the Talmud rather than in Scripture. And this was apparent even in our Lord's time, who said to the leaders of the people, "You make the word of God of none effect through your traditions." And the Old Testament faith was clearly Trinitarian. After the Apostolic Age, Judaism became Unitarian and steadily humanistic, so that Judaism today is a form of religious humanism. It is the same thing as unity, basically. Unity is Judaism for the Gentiles. It is the same thing as the Unitarian Church, as the Ethical Culture Society. There's no difference. So that God for it is just a word, whatever social process they want to give that name. And of course, many of these people today feel that they should drop the word God because it has too many connotations and it's best to retire the word. Yes?
I was wondering how they teach comparative religion in college today. I mean, do they really explore the different ones? What type of an approach do they have? Does it come out this way? They're all equal.
Yes, it tends to. I know in one of the major universities of the West, the Department of Comparative Religions is headed by a man I used to know and studied under for a time, and this is his perspective. All religions basically are one. There are degrees of progress in these religions, but basically, he reduces them all to a mystical interpretation whereby man is striving for a higher goal, and it ends up looking very much like Hinduism. And his disciples have a disconcerting habit, as far as their parents are concerned, of going in for a lot of Hindu exercises and yogi practices and the like, so that even though these comparative religions departments, as this one, tend to equate all religions as one, they pick one particular one as the superior one. No. Not Christianity, no. They are uniformly hostile to it. What we fail to realize is that the great offense of Christianity is that it is God-centered. And it has been exceedingly rare in the history of mankind, and this may seem like a strange statement, but it is true, for any religion even to have a God. Most religions have not been theistic. Buddhism has no God. Taoism has no God. Confucianism, which began as a philosophy and became a religion, has no God. Hinduism and Shintoism have no God, but they have many divine spirits, and all of us are divine spirits, ultimately. And you can go on down the line, and you find that most religions have no God. About the only place you find anything that resembles a God is in something or other which is derivative from the Bible. Mohammedanism has a God, Allah. But Allah has no resemblance to the biblical God, and Allah really boils down to blind and total determinism. Just a total mechanistic, deterministic power that's at work. And ultimately, the personal things in Mohammedanism came to be the jinns, or the genies, or these many minor spirits, superhuman spirits that are revolving around the world and are involved in the affairs of men. Because Allah is totally impersonal. He is a mechanistic force which totally determines all things. But really, basically without personality.
Well, that's the most classic viewpoint, even though it's humanistic. Do they pretend that we're all thinking the same thing, that we're all looking for the same thing? Do they pretend it, or are they honest?
They are, well, this is a generalization, because some are not honest and others are. For some, the only valid interpretation of Christianity is a mystical one. These people who wrote the Bible, they say, were naive and simple-minded people, and if they only knew the truth, they would have known that in the midst of all this nonsense they were writing, they expressed vaguely certain things which are possible to construe mystically, and we will put this mystical interpretation on it. And so they will interpret Jesus as one of the masters of India, and supposedly, according to some of these people, he went to India. You get into all kinds of nonsense here. But at all costs, it has to be reinterpreted. And of course, the present trend is not only to a unification of all the churches in terms of this one religion kind of faith, but a one world religion. And some have already outlined the holidays, as I've stated before, of this one world religion, the Feast of Wesak, a Buddhist festival, the Feast of the Resurrection, a kind of a spring rites festival, the rebirth of nature annually, and the third, the festival or feast of humanity, which is the basic one. All these faiths are basically humanistic. And they want to reduce Christianity to humanism. Yes? Well, to leave it out entirely, if it is to be taught as comparative religion, because comparative religion as a subject means that all religions are basically one. This is the presupposition of this entire school of thought as it developed in the last 100 to 150 years. So the subject preconditions the conclusions. To study various religions is another matter, individually. But comparative religions studies them all as one. So that you are studying Christianity and Buddhism and Shintoism and animism and all of these as one religion. This is the unwritten presupposition. Now, I think it is well to note what Gordon Clark, one of our better philosophers of today, although I don't agree with Clark in many areas, but Gordon Clark has stated that there is no such thing as religion. There are religions. But what can you identify as religion? What do they have in common? His answer is, it is impossible to say, because you can't say they have a belief in God in common, because most of them don't. What do they have in common? A belief in a life after death? Many of them don't. A belief in truth? Well, many of them deny that there is such a thing as truth. What do they have in common? And he says, nothing. There are religions. There is no such thing as religion. And comparative religion says there is a religion behind all religions, and this is what we are teaching you. Thus, I would approve of the teaching of courses in Buddhism or in Shintoism and so on. but not in comparative religion. Well, humanism, of course, epitomizes the comparative religion's perspective. Yes.
Russian, the absolute truth of creation was challenged by the alchemists. Do you see any relation with the alchemists of yesterday with the synthesizers today of the DuPont laboratories that take wood and bring in saccharin products of this nature?
Very, very discerning question. The alchemists are again very popular and are receiving extensive study on the part of scholars today, because the attitude today is the alchemists were basically right, but they were very crude and foolish in their method. The basic principle of the alchemists was that there is nothing fixed in nature, that it is basically a developing, changing thing, that it can change from one form to another, and therefore it will be easy to take one thing and make it another. Now, this is in essence what the modern scientist believes. His perspective is totally evolutionary. There are basically no laws there for him. Nature is malleable. He can make of it what he will. And the thesis is man can now make himself, as one book has stated in its title, because he can control his own evolution, and he can remake the whole world of nature because it is totally malleable. There is no form there, really, no law. Therefore, it is totally open to his control. And they are alchemists by intention, but they are far more sophisticated alchemists. And they believe they are going to make what they want out of nature, out of creation. And this stems from their total contempt for creation. We've referred some time back in our discussion to this problem with regard to operations. For example, these animal parts that they put in man. Now, they know what they're doing. They know that every fiber of our body is absolutely different from everyone else's. So that not only are you different from every other kind of creation, you are different so that a piece of your skin, a few cells of your body, are discernibly male rather than female. But you're also different from every other male, totally unique. And your body continually resists any invasion by any other alien organ. And so it rejects a transplant. So what they have to do is to bombard your blood, either by radiation or through chemical therapy, to break down its resistance. But what happens is that ultimately the person dies. They manage to keep him alive sometimes for months. But his body rejects this alien organism, and this alien organism is at war with his body because it's not its own body. And the two are at war. But they know all of this, and yet their thesis is we're going to break it down somehow. We're going to be alchemists, you see, with the human body. Because we deny that there is any fixed law in nature that we cannot change. And if we only unlock, for example, the genetic code, we're going to do this and that, and we're going to produce geniuses at will, and a Superman. But we are the modern alchemists. A very good question, because the alchemists certainly are among the most highly respected persons today. And it is significant that one of the most notorious, or as you will, greatest of alchemists, Paracelsus, is having his complete works reprinted in a special edition because of the extensive philosophical and scientific interest in what he represented. The edition of Paracelsus is not a cheap thing to publish. Now, I think it will cost $75 or $100 to buy the 4 or 5 volumes of his works. But it is a testimony to the tremendous interest in alchemy. Yes, one more question.
Is there any medical reason why a person wouldn't homosexual? I've talked to people who believe they three-fourths of the way that it is simple, but that they would like a real medical scientific opinion that that there isn't some failing or part that is wrong.
Yes.
And so forth.
Yes, this constant attempt is to find a medical answer to what is basically a moral problem in order to escape and evade the fact of human responsibility. And this is a very enticing kind of thesis because first it makes the person no longer guilty for his condition. It's a medical thing. It's an accident of hormones or of body chemistry. Then it becomes a medical problem to cure, you see. Then you reduce evil and sin generally by this thesis, problems of mental health, you know, to a matter for experts rather than individual responsibility, and you turn over society to the social engineers. And this is the basic thesis of all these opinions. All our problems are ultimately reducible to matters which are amenable to the social engineers. Therefore, let us destroy the biblical doctrine of the responsibility of man as a sinner. And we will say it is a problem of environment, of chemistry, of heredity, and so on. And then the social engineer can deal with it. And when you said this, you have destroyed what we know to be civilization. And you've supplanted it with total statism, the rule of the social engineers. And this is, of course, what is being preached, this kind of doctrine, by the churches today, more than anyone else, I would say. And by the state schools and on all sides. It is a deadly doctrine and it is a doomed one. It is fallacious. Well, our time is up and we stand dismissed.